Chapter 42. Will have something out of someone for my ruin, by fair means or foul. He is not responsible. It's the system. But, if I do no violence to any of them, here I may. I don't know what may happen, if I am carried beyond myself at last. I will accuse the individual workers of that system against me, face to face, before the great eternal bar. His passion was fearful. I could not have believed in such rage without seeing it. I have done, he said, sitting down and wiping his face. Mr. Jarndyce, I have done. I am violent, I know. I ought to know it. I have been in prison for contempt of court. I have been in prison for threatening the solicitor. I have been in this trouble, and that trouble, and shall be again. I am the man from Shropshire, and I sometimes go beyond amusing them, though they have found it amusing to see me committed into custody, and brought up in custody and all that. It would be better for me, they tell me, if I restrained myself. I tell them that, if I did restrain myself I should become imbecile. I was a good enough tempered man once, I believe. People in my part of the country say they remember me so, but now I must have this vent under my sense of injury, or nothing could hold my wits together. It would be far better for you, Mr. Gridley, the Lord Chancellor told me last week, not to waste your time here, and to stay, usefully employed, down in Shropshire. My lord, I know it would, said I to him, and it would have been far better for me never to have heard the name of your high office, but unhappily for me, I can't undo the past, and the past drives me here. Besides, he added, breaking fiercely out, I'll shame them. To the last, I'll show myself in that court to its shame. If I knew when I was going to die, and could be carried there, and had a voice to speak with, I would die there, saying, you have brought me here, and sent me from here many and many a time. Now send me out feet foremost. His countenance had, perhaps for years, become so set in its contentious expression, that it did not soften, even now when he was quiet. I came to take these babies down to my room for an hour, he said, going to them again, and let them play about. I didn't mean to say all this, but it don't much signify. You're not afraid of me, Tom, are you? No, said Tom. You ain't angry with me. You are right, my child. You're going back, Charlie? Aye? Come then, little one. He took the youngest child on his arm, where she was willing enough to be carried. I shouldn't wonder if we found a gingerbread soldier downstairs. Let's go and look for him. He made his former rough salutation, which was not deficient in a certain respect, to Mr. Jarndyce, and bowing slightly to us, went downstairs to his room. Upon that, Mr. Skimpole began to talk, for the first time since our arrival, in his usual gay strain. He said, well, it was really very pleasant to see how things lazily adapted themselves to purposes. Here was this Mr. Gridley, a man of a robust will, and surprising energy intellectually speaking, a sort of inharmonious blacksmith, and he could easily imagine that there Gridley was, years ago, wandering about in life for something to expend his superfluous combativeness upon, a sort of young love among the thorns, when the Court of Chancery came in his way, and accommodated him with the exact thing he wanted. There they were, matched, ever afterwards. Otherwise he might have been a great general, blowing up all sorts of towns, or he might have been a great politician, dealing in all sorts of parliamentary rhetoric. But as it was, he and the Court of Chancery had fallen upon each other in the pleasantest way, and nobody was much the worse, and Gridley was, so to speak, from that hour provided for. Then look at Covence's. How delightfully poor Covence's father of these charming children illustrated the same principle. He, Mr. Skimpole, himself, had sometimes repined at the existence of Covence's. He had found Covence's in his way. He could have dispensed with Covence's. There had been times when, if he had been a sultan, and his grand vizier had said one morning, "What does the commander of the faithful require at the hands of his slave?" he might have even gone so far as to reply, "The head of Covenses." But what turned out to be the case, that, all that time, he had been giving employment to a most deserving man, that he had been a benefactor to Covenses, that he had actually been enabling Covenses to bring up these charming children in this agreeable way, developing these social virtues, insomuch that his heart had just now swelled, and the tears had come into his eyes, when he had looked round the room and thought, "I was the great patron of Covenses, and his little comforts were my work." There was something so captivating in his light way of touching these fantastic strings, and he was such a mirthful child by the side of the graver childhood we had seen, that he made my guardian smile even as he turned towards us from a little private talk with Mrs. Blinder. We kissed Charlie, and took her downstairs with us, and stopped outside the house, to see her run away to her work. I don't know where she was going, but we saw her run, such a little creature in her womanly bonnet and apron, through a covered way at the bottom of the court, and melt into the city's strife, and sound like a dewdrop in an ocean. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.